Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is Steve Villano, former head of Governor Mario Cuomo's New York City press office and author of the new book, Tightrope, Balancing Life Between Mario Cuomo and My Brother. Welcome, Steve.
Thank you, Alan. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Okay, so let's start by just learning a little bit about you. You worked for Mario for how long?
A total of 8 years.
That's a lot of long 1985
to 1993.
And to bring it full circle, you knew the now governor, Andrew Cuomo.
Yeah, in fact, I was fortunate to be, I was originally hired by Andrew. When I first applied for the first position that I was considered for was an ombudsman position. With the state, and it just so happened that the day that I came up for my interview was December 7th, 1984, and happened to be the day that Al Del Bello resigned as lieutenant governor. So the first
Which
thing
is I, interesting,
yeah.
in that Al Del
yeah.
Bello was Italian.
Yeah.
Are you Italian?
Yes, I am.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the question I have is that the rumor that was going around was Cuomo, who liked to balance, Papa Cuomo, who liked to balance the ticket, was a little annoyed that he had to run because at that point he hadn't chosen Del Bello, but he had won the primary.
Right.
And he sort of ignored Del Bello. It was not a nice thing in many people's minds. And Del Bello finally said, oh, the hell with this, and walked away.
Well, I guess that was the way Del Bello felt, was that he felt he was not being utilized to the maximum extent of his ability. But the interesting thing about his resignation that day was that that's what brought Andrew to Albany. He was working in Bob Morgenthau's, the district attorney's office.
As many young but well-connected people did.
And so he came up to deal with the crisis of the Del Bello resignation. And when I walked into the interview, the first thing I said was, I just want to let you know that I would accept the position that's now open for lieutenant governor. And Andrew very wisely said, well, we'll keep that in mind. And he laughed. And we hit it off from there.
And it's extraordinary that this was December 7th, which, of course, is Pearl Harbor Day.
Yep.
So let's get to the meat of it. You've written this book, Tightrope, which is balancing a life between Mario Cuomo and my brother. But you didn't say, and my brother the mobster, which would have sold more books on the front page. Mm-hmm. So how come?
Because I wasn't interested in selling books. And it goes much deeper than my brother's association with the Gambino crime family. It goes to who my brother was. And that's the reason I wrote the book, was to definitively set the record straight on the pernicious rumors that had circulated, that had been circulated about the governor, Governor Mario Cuomo, when he was governor, because I knew from the inside that they were nothing but lies, and they were made up largely by his political opponents. And I only regret not being able to write the book a lot sooner, to set the record straight a lot sooner. But I also wanted to point out the damage that's done in families where there are some mob connections, like there were in my family, and that it's a very subtle damage that eats away at the family structure. And there was never any question in my mind when Mario Cuomo appeared on the scene that I wanted to work with him, because he was so a public official of such great integrity. That's who I wanted to model my life after. I went to law school, and the governor was just becoming a public figure at that particular point. And he represented everything that I thought an Italian-American professional should strive to be and could be. Not only was he articulate, he was intelligent, he was compassionate, and he put all of those things together. And he had, and several people have noted this, you yourself have noted this, is that he had such a reverence for the law. He had a reverence for the law, he had a reverence for his faith and for his family. And that was how I wanted to be as
okay.
an Italian-American
All right,
professional.
That's great. Now, I really do think it's great because, as you know, I felt the same way. I was an Italian, but I certainly interviewed him for a lot of years.
Sure.
Ahead of show.
Sure.
Okay, but there were these persistent rumors that his father-in-law, Mr. Rafa, who was in construction was connected.
And they were all disproven. And perhaps the greatest investigation that was done on that was done by Nicholas Pileggi. Nick Pileggi spent hours and days going through the records of the New York City Police Department and talking to many, many people. And I detail this in my book, that there was absolutely no evidence that there was any connection there. And what bothered me the most, as someone whose family did have those connections, was how these rumors were continually circulated. And if it wasn't circulated about the governor, they were whispered about other people who were around him. Well, the governor had zero tolerance for that, as you know. And every single one of those rumors were tracked down by Pileggi. Newsday spent $1.5 million doing an investigation of the entire Cuomo family, found absolutely nothing. The Organized Crime Task Force, nothing. The FBI, nothing. So Mario Cuomo was investigated much more. Unfortunately, the same investigation should have been done of Donald Trump, because we know going back to 1954, Trump's father, Fred, had a partner, a business partner, who was a capo in the Genovese crime family, Willie Tomasello. And he and Tomasello were hauled before a U.S. Senate committee for misspending federal housing funds. So what's the reason? The only reason why these issues were raised with Mario Cuomo was because his name ended in a vowel.
Well, yes, but I remember one distinct time on my show with the governor, then Governor Mario Cuomo, which somebody, I don't believe it was me, raised the issue of the mafia. And he decided, in his usually eloquent, incredibly effective way, to disprove the idea that there was a mafia. He was going to talk us out of the fact that there was a mafia. And the next day, the Daily News put out a big headline saying, yes, Mario, there is a mafia. So he was not afraid to tangle it up, right?
Sure. And I knew what the governor meant then. What he meant was that it shouldn't be, an Italian word shouldn't be used to define organized crime. And as we're discovering today, and more news comes out about Trump, the Russian mafia is very big and very powerful and worldwide. And so, yes, as a person who grew up with both of the Gambino crime family and members of the Gambino crime family and the Genovese crime family married into my family. And unfortunately, a series of events in my brother's life led him to seek assistance from the Gambino crime family. So there was a mafia. And I knew it firsthand. I understand precisely what the governor said.
How much of that did you know, Steve Villano, from the very beginning? In other words, did you know all along that you had a brother who was in the mob?
No. What I knew was that a member of the Gambino crime family married into our family, married an aunt of ours, and a member of the Genovese crime family married my mother's cousin. And that we knew from the early 1960s, the late 50s, the early 1960s. So I was 10 years old, and it was kind of like background music in my life at that time. My brother did not get involved. His involvement did not begin until the mid-70s.
But were your parents gone by that time?
No, my mother passed away in 2007. My father passed away in 1993.
So were they upset?
My mother was always upset by my brother's association. She never particularly liked these wise guys, and she didn't know to what extent my brother became involved. My father was upset, as I point out in the book, because my brother, when he later became involved, would spend some of his Sunday afternoons at the house of Carmine Fatico, Charlie Wagons Fatico, who ushered him into the crime family. And he would spend his Sundays with Uncle Charlie, as he was called, rather than with my father. So my father was very resentful that my brother was tipping toward money rather than toward the rest of the family.
To say nothing of crime.
Well, and to crime as well, and that's where the money came from. Yeah. And there's a chapter in my book that's called Money as God. And it's from the quote is from Mario Puzo's best book, which was The Fortunate Pilgrim, his book that he wrote before The Godfather, where he talks about immigrants in this country who are so blinded by the streets being paved with gold, as Canaletta wrote. But in my family, that was important to my brother. It was important to some of the members of the family. To me, money never meant anything, which is another reason why I loved Mario Cuomo, because money never meant anything to him.
True.
And Andrew,
although when he did retire, he had a corner office in a major law firm, and he made a little rain, as we say.
Well, he was a great lawyer. He should have.
Well, you can't have it both ways. He could have gone to work for a public service organization as opposed to a corner office in a major law firm.
But he still did public service.
Yeah.
He still did public service. He was what we want public servants to be, and that is to serve the public first, not to serve themselves. Mm-hmm. When I spoke earlier, there were a number of my former colleagues from the Cuomo administration there, And what was nice was that we all felt a strong bond together because we went into public service to serve the public. We didn't go in to become rich.
No, I hear that. Yeah. You made that point. Let me ask you a question. Do you think your hiring had anything to do with the fact that you're Italian?
Not at all. In fact, I, you know, felt guilty over the fact that there were these connections in my family that I knew about tangentially at the time. And that I, in the back of my mind, it was always, well, if they ever became an issue, I would resign immediately.
Okay, let's go right into the interview.
Sure.
So now, is Andrew interviewed you in the first instance, right? Is that correct?
Well, it was a group of 12 people gathered around a big table.
Really?
And Andrew was in this interview, and they were interviewing candidates for the ombudsman positions around New York City.
So none of these people who are on trial now for their, like Joe Prococo or others were...
Nobody was around then.
This is all early. Yeah. Okay, so at what point did you disclose that your brother was in the mob?
The day my brother was sentenced to jail. I came back from my brother's sentencing hearing in 1988. And my brother was sentenced to 90 days in jail for income tax evasion. And there were a couple of reporters I knew from my life of working with the governor who were in the courtroom. And I went back to my office, and I was working on the governor's behalf at the Long Island Power Authority because we were trying to get the Shoreham Nuclear Power Plant closed down.
I remember it very well.
And I called the governor, and I said, Governor, I have some very unpleasant news, and told him that my brother was sentenced and what the judge said. And the governor... You know, as you would expect, Alan, because you know the man, you knew the man. He said, I feel deeply for you, but that should have no effect on you because you're a superb public official. Only Mario Cuomo.
And were you the press guy in New York at that point of the game?
No, I was a vice president at the Long Island Power Authority. I helped set up the authority.
Okay.
And I was the governor's man helping to get the Shoreham Nuclear Power Plant closed on Long Island. I lived on Long Island, so it made a lot of sense. Then I came back after that and ran the governor's press office from 89 through 92. So as you would have expected, that was the kind of person Mario Cuomo was, that he could separate and not hold you guilty by association.
Indeed. But is it possible, Steve Villano, that because he had been tarnished, as you put it before, by all these people who tried to, that he had an association with the mob himself or his family did, that perhaps he was particularly sensitive to that and basically saying, I'm not going to hold you responsible for this?
I don't think it was because he was tarnished. I think it's more, it's deeper than that.
Well, I think that's what you said.
Yeah, but I think it's far deeper than that. The governor understood discrimination. I mean, remember when he graduated from law school, he was at the very top of his class. And not one single Wall Street firm would hire him because his first name was Mario.
Yeah.
So he lived this. He understood this very, very deeply. And he understood the dignity that human beings have. We need more people in government like that today. And so I think it didn't have anything to do with the slurs that were circulated against him. It had to do with his inherent sense of fairness and an inherent sense that just because you might be considered the other, whether you are Italian, whether you are Muslim, whether you are Mexican, that no one has the right to hold those things against you.
No, I got it. Yeah. So every time this mob stuff would come up against Governor Mario, there was always an opportunity to reignite, you know, the whole thing. I remember the time that his father-in-law got beaten up in a garage the car was, before the FBI and others, the story went, I don't know if it was true, that the car was taken away and detailed inside and out.
It was not true. And Nicholas Pileggi's research detailed every single fact. He went through every fact.
And the answer is?
And the answer was that was not true. None of those allegations were true. And I urge you to go back and look at the Pileggi piece, but I have it quoted in here because Nick Pileggi did the most definitive research on that particular
incident. What happened? He got beaten up. The father was an old man at the time.
Beaten up close to death.
Beaten up close to death. And do we know why to this day he was beaten up?
Because he was in a rough neighborhood. I mean, there are thousands of cases like that throughout Brooklyn people get beaten up all the time. And he was an older man at that particular time, and someone decided to, you know, it was one of those random beatings that happened, unfortunately, all the time.
Yeah. So let's go to Andrew Cuomo. Now, this is a book about Mario Cuomo. When I first talked to you on the phone, you mentioned that you had admiration for Andrew Cuomo, too. What's that based on?
Based upon my personal experience, as you can read in the book, every one of my experiences with Andrew during my tenure of working with the governor was extraordinarily positive. Andrew was very supportive to me from the very beginning. When I took a self-imposed exile after my brother's sentencing because I just was so upset by it and the potential impact it could have on Mario Cuomo, and then decided to come back to work in the Cuomo administration because I felt that's what my calling was, public service, and that's where I belonged. Andrew welcomed me back with open arms. So that I have nothing but the highest admiration for Andrew Cuomo because of my personal experience with Andrew. And I've seen from the very beginning, and don't forget, he hired me. He had just turned 27 when he hired me. So I saw Andrew from the very beginning of his involvement in state and national politics.
Yeah. But your narrative runs counter, Steve, to what a lot of other people perceive as a sort of bullying nature of this
guy. Well, that doesn't faze me in one bit because I saw a different side to Andrew Cuomo. And in my book, I have several quotes from Andrew's own book that came out a couple of years ago, All Things Possible. I wish people would read some of the segments in there because Andrew stood up to Meet Esposito. He stood up to Donald Manus. He stood up to Stanley Friedman on his father's behalf. Is Andrew a strong leader? Yes, he is. And I think he's a strong leader for the right things.
But doesn't he pick on people like the controller, wonderful controller in DiNapoli and Mayor de Blasio, and he's in a fight with Eric Schneiderman now and then? Can't he learn how to play nicely with his colleagues?
We could say that about them as well. I mean,
why does everyone
put the onus on Andrew? I wrote about my experience, and my experience was that Andrew was always very kind to me, very gracious, and supported many of the initiatives that I was working on. And so I think that there are three highly qualified individuals in this country right now who could run anything. I think Jerry Brown, since I now live in California, Jerry Brown came in, took over a $25 billion deficit created by Arnold Schwarzenegger and turned the state of California around. I think Andrew Cuomo is the second one, that he knows more about government at every single level than most people in this country who are holding public office. And I think John Kasich, because Kasich served in the House of Representatives and he has served as governor. And so I think that those three are among the most qualified individuals in this country to run anything.
Because we're running out of time. So is Andrew Cuomo running for president?
I don't know. You have to have Andrew on to ask him that.
Well, you're a very bright guy.
Would I like him to? I think that a dream ticket for me would be Cuomo Klobuchar, because I love what Amy Klobuchar has shown us that she can do in Minnesota. But again, running for president, and it's in this book here, everyone on staff, when a lot of the boomlets were occurring around Mario Cuomo, were saying, you know, Governor, you should consider running. And the governor said to me, "What? You haven't said anything about it." And I said, well, you know, it's a personal decision. Your family comes first, and you have to decide what it is that you want to do. And I can't tell you to make that decision because you will be the
one. Well, but Mario always told me that he didn't spend enough time with his family when he was governor. That's what he said to me, and he said it again and again.
Well, I think all of us who are fathers feel that we can always spend more time with our children.
That's true.
I felt that same way. My son is now a writer.
What have you been doing since you were out of politics?
Well, I ran three major nonprofit organizations. I worked at SUNY Downstate Medical Center in Brooklyn and also at SUNY Stony Brook Medical Center. So I've kept my hand in public education, public health. And then 2 years ago, I started writing the book after I finished my time of running as CEO of nonprofit organizations.
Were you in touch with your brother when he was in prison?
Yes.
Well, how did that go? Yes.
He was allowed one phone call per day. And so he did call me and told me that he was doing okay, that he was working on computers. It didn't go well because then I said to him, you know, make sure you adhere to the conditions of your parole.
Did he take a plea? You know, did he take a plea?
No, he was sentenced. He was sentenced to 90 days.
Yeah, but was there a trial or did he just take
it? It was a sentencing hearing. Yeah, it was a sentencing hearing. There was no trial.
Right. So in other words, he said, I did it.
Yes.
And that was the plea.
That's correct. And he was found guilty for income tax evasion.
Uh-huh.
He was a bag man for John Gotti. That's what the judge said. That's what the court said. And
90 days is not a lot.
Well, it could have been 4 years. And his sentence was reduced because my brother had very good recommendations for him by a lot of people who he did some good for in his life.
Did the Cuomos do anything?
Not at all. No, they didn't know anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was assiduous to make sure that there was no link whatsoever because I knew that there were forces out there, particularly those who were against Mario Cuomo, who would have just loved to make something of a link which didn't exist.
Is your brother still with us?
No, he passed away in November of 2014, less than 60 days before Mario Cuomo passed away. And when my brother and the governor both died within that period of time, I said to Carol, my wife, that I have no more excuses not to write the book. that I have been nurturing this story for 30 years.
Well, what would you have cared if you wrote the book while Mary was alive? I have a feeling, based on what you've read to us and what you've said, he would be delighted with the book.
That's what I'm told. Ken Auletta told me the same thing. Ken Auletta read the book, and he sent me this wonderful note and said that he thought the governor would be very proud of how he is portrayed in the book and how I dealt with my struggle in the book.
Yeah. And when you look back on it, and you look back on the whole thing, what advice do you have for the rest of us?
Persist. Persist. Yeah. Persist in search of the truth. It's advice given to me by Peter Quinn, a magnificent author of Banished Children of Eve, which is a story of Irish immigration that he novelized. And during the course of writing the book, I'd call Peter and I'd kvetch. I really want to get back out among people. And he'd say, just persist. Just persist.
And, well, do you have a choice? I mean, most of us don't have a choice. You persist because that's what life is.
Well, and writers have a choice because writers cannot
Well, you've
write.
Written a very nice book here. There will be you. People who say, too nice.
Too nice to what?
Well, to Mario, to Andrew, to those people.
I think I paint a very complete picture.
Do you say anything negative about either of them?
Have you read the book entirely?
Well, it was a fair question.
Yeah, so. There are parts in the book where I talk about, when the governor got upset about something or if Andrew got upset about something. But I understood it in the larger context of things. The governor would let off steam or he'd, get angry over an issue or how something was
treated. I had those midnight telephone calls.
I'm sure you did. We both did. We both did. But it's part of the humanity. And what I loved about, there's a section in the book here where the governor and I had this big disagreement over his First Amendment speech, where I wanted him to do it. And he didn't want it. It was after the press was attacking him during the election of 1986. And we came out of an event. And he had just been merciless on coming back at the press. And I said, Governor, you're never going to win that fight. You're never going to win that
fight. Something Donald Trump might remember now.
And he said, I'm going to carry it right to them. And I said, why don't you just change the playing field?
So if somebody from the Podunk Journal, people should know, or Boonville Journal, wrote something negative about the governor, he'd call him up in the middle of the night and he'd yell at him. That's not something Andrew does.
Well, they're different people. They're different.
They sure are different people.
But that's what makes it beautiful. My son is different than me, and as well he should be. And, each has different facets of their personality, which I think are just worthwhile for people to look at and to see the depth of their humanity.
Well, I love this conversation, and thank you so much. We are out of time. Our guest has been Steve Villano, former head of Governor Mario Cuomo's New York City press office, and author of the new book, Tightrope, Balancing Life Between Mario Cuomo and My Brother. Steve, thanks so much for joining us. It was a pleasure.
Alan, the pleasure was mine. Thank you.
Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.